To order.
Office thing yesterday.
Monday, April the 24th, a little after 9:00. And in the room is Senator Bunting, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, Co-Chair Wilkin, and myself, Senator Green. First thing we're going to do is go through kind of the sections on the Capitol bill. And that'll be a very brief review, and then we'll kind of give you the schedule of which departments are going to, you know, present when. And Ginger's going to walk us through the proposed schedule. So we won't really be going through this today, but it's for you to have in your hands now and to study. And Ginger, walk us through, please.
Okay. For the record, my name is Ginger Blaisdell. I'm staff to Senator Green. And in the version of the Capitol bill that's before you, it's SB 231. It's version F. And I'll give you just a real brief format on how the bill reads, and then you can go through it the next couple of days. Section 1 includes the capital projects as we adjusted the governor's capital bill. It also includes the capital or deferred maintenance supplemental bill that was SB 233. The start date for the deferred maintenance, or no, for all of the projects in this particular bill, section of the bill, is July 1, 2006. And in general, all deferred maintenance was combined into a single appropriation for each agency and was fully funded at the governor's requested level. Section 4 includes the capital projects as adjusted to the governor's regular supplemental bill. And the start date for these projects is immediate. There weren't very many capital projects in the supplemental bill, but the effective date needed to be in this fiscal year. Section 7 includes the operating projects as adjusted in the governor's regular supplemental bill. The start date for these projects is immediate. Some of the governor's requested supplemental items are still under review by the House and Senate co-chairs and will be considered for addition in the next version of this capital bill. Sections 10 through 25 are the language sections and include provisions that become effective immediately. Some are fund transfer provisions and reappropriations that will become effective on June 30th, 2006, and some language will become effective on July 1st, 2007. So the language provisions, if you're curious when they need to take place, you can refer to the last section of the bill, and that has all of the lapse dates or effective dates. District reappropriations are sections 26 through 42. And if everyone can please double check this section to ensure that your local community's reappropriations are included as requested. I think I checked them all off, but it's good to have another set of eyes. Section 43 is the language for the for a CBR. That is for FY 06 and 07. It includes an increase to the Department of Revenue Treasury Division for investment fee increases. And this is also kind of our general fund cash flow balancing mechanism. Sorry, that's in there. You will notice that there's a large section of projects that are out of the budget right now. All the projects that were originally to be included in the tobacco bond legislation have been removed from this bill. The House will complete their work on the tobacco bond bill and add the projects before it's forwarded to the Senate. And when it gets to the Senate, we'll look again at those projects, and if there's any adjusting that needs to be done, we'll work closely with the House to coordinate that the projects are in the tobacco bill as well as in the capital appropriation bill. Legislative priorities will be included in the next CS, and we'll provide that either on Wednesday following the agency testimony or Thursday morning, just preceding public testimony. And then amendments to this bill will be heard on Saturday morning beginning at 9 a.m. And if all the amendments can be turned into Senator Green's office by 4 o'clock on Friday, that would be very helpful in preparing for Saturday morning's meeting. Tomorrow and Wednesday, we'll be hearing testimony from each of the agencies regarding the committee's changes to the governor's requested capital projects and supplemental needs. Each agency should take no longer than just 5 to 10 minutes to talk about the critical needs that may not be included in this bill. And on Tuesday, we'll be hearing the Department of Corrections, Education, Labor, Commerce, Environmental Conservation, Natural Resources, and DOT. On Wednesday, the university requested to be first on the list, so that will be the university, then the Departments of Law, Public Safety, Revenue, Administration, the Court System, Fish and Game, Health and Social Services, and Military and Veterans Affairs. And that is the rundown of the bill.
For our office? Okay, thanks, Ginger.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay. More to follow. Okay, those of you who are here for the capital budget exclusively really don't have to hang around, but that's all we're going to be doing on that. We'll take a 2-minute break to allow you to clear the room. Oh, I'm sorry, yes. Thank you. Dr. Olson, and before us again 305, which 408, which we had, I think, last Saturday, and we have some amendments. And Jan Rutherdale is off net. Answer, she's with the Department of Law. Okay, Reneva, bring us back to where we are.
Madam Chair, did you want me to go through the bill again, or?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
We're working on the S version.
Yes, sir. Sure.
For the record, Reneva Moss, legislative aide for Representative Coghill. Madam Chair, the department is doing something in Section 1 and 2 that Representative Coghill tried to do several years ago, and that is raise the level or the standard for not providing family support services from a preponderance of evidence to clear and convincing. We would like to see OCS do everything they can to provide family preservation services and to reunite the children with family or family members versus taking them out of the family circle and placing them in non-family placements. Section 4, Representative Chenault wanted this provision, which last year in House Bill 53, we made the legislation or the statutes more clear that public officials and their employees can obtain information from the department on behalf of parents. This just says that they have 5 working days to do that after the request has been made. We've talked to OCS. They feel they can comply with the 5 days because of their new ORCA system. This clarifies that once a report of harm has been made that involves public disclosure by a parent, an alleged perpetrator being charged with a crime, or a death or near death of a child, that OCS can disclose certain confidential information to the public. What we want to do is give OCS the tools they need to respond to allegations of the department. Section 6 broadens the ability to talk about not just a person in that specific report of harm, but any child and any parent or adult in the home. Section 7 deals with permanent fund dividends that are held in trust for children in state custody. This says that there are only certain ways that those dividends can be released. That would be if the child was returned to the parent, if the child was adopted and that adoption had survived 1 year, if the child turned 18, or if a legal guardian went to the court and got the court's permission to receive the dividend. Section 8 is putting the state in compliance with federal law and requires practitioners of healing arts to report as child abuse to OCS anything observed at delivery that would indicate that there was an adverse condition of the child to either a controlled substance or alcohol. Section 9 consolidates House Bill 346, which is Representative Newman's legislation that requires training of social workers to include constitutional and statutory rights of children and families. Section 10 is indirect court rules dealing with Sections 1 through 3, raising the standard to clear and convincing evidence. The applicability clause in Section 11 says that it involves pending cases and non-pending cases that are still within the statute of limitations for appeals. Section 12 says that the court rule change in Section 10 must pass by a two-thirds vote for Sections 1, 2, and 3 to be effective, and the bill as a whole has an immediate effective date. We also have two amendments, Madam Chair, that we would like to offer for consideration by the committee.
I think you have these amendments, and they're numbered 1 and 2, and they both deal with on page, I think it's page 6. Okay, I would move amendment number 1 and object for explanation.
Yes, Madam Chair. Amendment number 1, last year when we had House Bill 53 going through, which, if you remember, had 57 sections, it was a very complex piece of legislation. But in the process of repealing the language in 4714-100E and reenacting it, when writing it, we actually lowered the standard to a showing of good cause, and it had been clear and convincing. So this amendment simply places it back to where it was pre-House Bill 53.
Any questions on that? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I'm confused here on that. Maybe I'm not looking at the right pieces of paper.
But through the chair, Senator Dyson, this adds a new subsection to the bill.
It would go in on
it would be a new Section 8.
Line 6, right before Section 8. It would extend and it would renumber after that. It's a new Section 8.
I'm sorry, am I looking at amendment number 1 by Senator Green?
Yes. The first line is a change to the title.
Yes.
And then the second thing beginning on line 4, page 6, following line 6, there's going to be a new Section 8, and it's going to include that information about clear and convincing evidence.
And through the chair, Senator Dyson, the 4714-100 is powers and duties of the department over the care of a child.
And I'm maybe looking at an old section of the code, but it doesn't fit, unless I'm looking at something wrong here.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, that is correct. What you are looking at is what was repealed in House Bill 53, and they rewrote that whole section. In doing so, where you read on page 841, if you look at E1, it says, makes a determination supported by clear and convincing evidence. We changed, when we rewrote that section, we changed that to a showing of good cause to the contrary. So we actually lowered the standard. This simply takes it back as rewritten in House Bill 53 to clear and convincing.
All right. So my problem is the code book hasn't been updated to last year's.
Correct. Through the chair, Senator Dyson, the new language is in the supplemental, the one book that was passed out at the beginning of session.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, so that just changes it to the level of clear and convincing evidence.
Correct.
Okay. Are there any more questions about amendment number one? I will remove my objection. Is there continued objection to amendment number one? Okay, amendment number one is adopted. I would move amendment number two and object for explanation.
Yes, Madam Chair. This change brings section 8, which is now section 9, in compliance with the language that is in CAPTA, which is the federal law. And I think it addresses some of the concerns of organizations that this is an ongoing process, not something that just happens during delivery. So we have deleted the phrase a child, and we have inserted the phrase an infant. And to give this a time limit, our legal department has defined infant as a child who is less than 12 months of age. So this would address the concerns of the ombudsman about a doctor seeing a 16-year-old drinking alcohol, or I believe the Alaska Primary Caregivers also had that same concern, that it was an ongoing requirement.
Yeah, we think this takes care of the, you may have this piece in your folder, and this amendment addresses that as well. Yeah. Are there any other questions? I will remove my objection. Is there any other objection to amendment number two? Amendment number two is adopted. Oh, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On section 7, when we deal with the permanent fund dividend, there's a verbiage in here that on line 28, it talks about a one-year lapse time since the time of final adoption for the state to send the dividends to the adopted parent's custody. And I'd like to have a little discussion on that one-year time frame. My concern is it may be a little short. I don't know the background on it, though, so maybe I could be enlightened a little bit. The direction of the permanent fund dividend is going to be increasing substantially over the next several years, and if the economic stimulus that we're working on here takes place, the size of the dividends over the next decade are going to be probably larger than most people's wildest dreams. And I'd hate to have, or my concern is that we don't have people that see a sizable dividend accumulation alter their decision process on the adoption. In other words, I wouldn't want to see any adoptions take place just to get access to the pool of dividends for an older child that's 10 or 11 years old, which could be a sizable amount of money.
One of the things it's hard, I think, to think of, but once a child is adopted, it's as if they are part of that family. They are not in and out. And I understand but they have to be treated like a child of the family. That was part of the discussion on the, why aren't people found out when they're mistreating children? Why didn't you go in there? You know, and with no reports of harm, no substantial, you don't go into an adoptive home just because it's an adoptive situation, and it becomes a family unit, just like a birth child. But they could probably give us some more information. Tammy, do you have any insight on that?
For the record, my name is Tammy Sandoval, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Office of Children's Services. I believe in working with Representative Coghill's office that we determine that in case there are any prospective adoptive parents who may have different motives other than just caring for and becoming a parent to a child in need of adoption, that this would provide some buffer for that. But that 1 year out, that we believe, as Senator Green said, that they are a member of the family legally. We've done, and we would have done, a home study and made that determination. There would have been a lot of steps that led up to that adoption, and that we don't have, I believe, the right to say that they need to be watched or monitored past that final. So I believe with the 1 year buffer, that that's allowing some look-see into that past that year.
Any follow-up, Senator Stillman?
No.
Okay. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I appreciate the concerns and the balance we're aiming at here. And some of the kids that get adopted are real high needs kids, and some of those are the continuing subsidy that follows them. And there are the situations in which a parent finds out that they can't handle the situation that they find themselves in, and there's a process for the revocation of the adoption. And I don't know all the reasoning that went into picking 1 year, but that's a fair period for folks to figure out whether or not they can do that. Is that the kind of reasoning that brought you to this 1 year period?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, yes. It seems that when an adoption does fail, it fails within that 1 year period.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A different subject. Did we follow up on that? Ms. Smith visited with us on Saturday about this request. Did you have some disposition of her request, Reneva?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, I spoke with Representative Coghill about this, and he feels that changing the child to the infant takes care of most of their concern. However, he is cautious towards doing anything else. I believe there was some legislation here last year or the year before that addressed ministers, and it failed. But he thinks that changing the infant is enough so that if, regardless of who it is, if they're involved in the delivery, they do have a responsibility to report.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Is there any other information you want to give us, Anita?
No, Madam Chair.
Senator Dyson.
I want to take the opportunity to congratulate and show my appreciation for what Representative Coghill and Chenault have done in this whole area, what was accomplished last year with Monumental. And fixing that up a little bit just shows a great deal of care and a responsible attitude. And I appreciate your bringing forward the amendments, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, if I could comment on Senator Dyson's remarks. He, of course, has been very active in this area also and has been an influence on us. And I think that the change we've seen in the last year is monumental, and I think it's monumental because of the people that you have managing OCS now. Their hearts are in the right place, and they're starting to make changes that we can certainly see in our office because we're getting less complaints. And that's always a way to monitor it. So I would just like to give the department some appreciation for the work they've done in the last year.
Does this have a company? Yes, Senate concurrent resolution.
Yes.
Okay, is there any further information that anyone needs on this legislation? If not, I am subject to the will of the committee.
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 408 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there an objection?
No.
Okay, so House Bill 408 with amended title change and accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations passes from committee. And we need to take up the Senate concurrent resolution as well. And do you have copies of that in your packet?
Yes.
All of you? Okay, just so you do. And this goes along just simply to enable the addition of and for placement of a child in the first line after phrase parental rights.
Would you please check for me?
You need a motion? I guess we do need a motion to adopt it and accept it. I think you may not have it. We'll take a brief of these. Brief of these.